Good morning. So, on Friday or Thursday, we were discussing Trillium, shift of the planets, trying to describe it with relativity. We can have one of the tests of one of the primary tests of relativity, like back in 100 years ago, century ago. And so we have two goals today. I want to discuss this. I also want to discuss bring the horizon a little bit. So to make it back to coordinate singularities and black holes, hopefully tomorrow. And this afternoon in the tutorial, we do the other test of relativity, the one that actually was used as an evidence, the bending of light, which is very similar to this calculation. And last time I started on this problem, I said, well, let's say this is Sun. Mercury is going around Sun. So you can use the actual perihelion, or if helps exaggerated, use the aphelion, the furthest distance. But the point is, unlike Newtonian gravity, this orbits are not closed because the periodicity of the radius is not the same as periodicity of the angular movement. So when it gets back to the same distance from the star, the already like the angle has moved further along. So we want to know how much has it moved. So to do that, I said, well, we use Schwarzschild metric. Once again, as a reminder, this is Schwarzschild. M is the central mass. I treat the planet as a test particle. Where d omega squared is d theta squared plus sine theta d phi. But because the problem has this spherical symmetry, then we can argue that the movement stays in the plane of the orbit, so I don't have movement, which we can actually calculate using the because I have some killing vectors, so I can take the plane of the movement to be theta equal to 2, theta equal to pi, and do the calculus pi over 2. We want the sine to be, what's the, which one do I want? The sine goes to 0. Sine goes to 1. Right. Okay. And then I said, well, this thing, this metric does not depend on which coordinates. So metric components do not depend on t. So two killing vectors, phi and t, right? One was this one, the other one was this. So therefore, I can write down the conservations corresponding to killing vector contracted by four velocity. So that gave me one of my conserved quantities, right? And the other one gave me the angular momentum. And meanwhile, I also have, this is a geodesic, so therefore I know the acceleration is zero, and I can use the affine, if this is time-like, I use the proper time to parameterize u. So therefore, in this case, u mu has to be minus one. And today, if we do the light geodesic, then these two will hold because still the same metric, except but the geodesic for light requires u mu to be the norm of the four velocity will become for photons? Tiago? Tom?
Zero.
Zero, right. Okay, so in that case, then the only thing that changes is this becomes zero. And once again, u mu was dx mu theta. In this case, my proper time is the affine parameter, t dot r dot 0 phi dot. We work them out explicitly. You write u mu's, you have the metric. You have k mu, which is just k0. This is only has the m phi component. And finally, I arrived at this conservation. So if I call also this to be f of r, then this is 1 over f of r. Then in terms of f, energy is ft dot. L is r squared phi dot. And then last one.
Sorry.
Yes.
You have a minus sign for E, like defining the conserved quantity out of killing winter and
You can take the positive, right? You can do the other one, but the negative is also conserved. Now the reason I did it is because I want to get to a positive quantity for, well, let me see, yeah? So when the way I use my convention, it agrees with the Newtonian definition of energy. And you see that because now I sub from these two, I substitute it to this one. And what I arrived at was the definition of E matches E squared. Although, now that you mention it, it doesn't look like the sign matters, right?
Is it square?
Yes. Maybe it doesn't. Yeah. But I'm trying to think it matches the T0. Well, in this case, I don't have T0. Somehow the quantum mechanical one.
Affect the R here.
Yeah, this does agree with the usual way that if you write down the T0i, then, yeah. Now let me think about it and don't say something. Yeah. Okay. So substituting there, you get at a conservation also that relates R to E, and that gives us the usual equation of motion from R. You can drive, you have effective potential, and I wrote down the V of R. It again was simple algebraic substitution. I got 1/2. And again, for null, you would get zero here. So it's very similar. But for time-like vector geodesic, this becomes. Which, again, does anybody remember what's the difference of this with the Newtonian version of obtaining the effective potential for orbits or that was the difference, right? So this is now a modification we have. And obviously I said, well, just looking at this effective potential, I can get some intuitive idea of what's happening because now V of R dictates the behavior of the system for me, what the orbit is doing. So I know at R going to zero, if I didn't have this, this would go blow up. So the Newtonian one would be going like this. Yeah. But with relativity, now I have a negative of something, goes down. It diverges to minus infinity. At r goes to zero, they all asymptote the constant. Now what happens in the middle is the key to determine what kind of solution do I get. And that depends on whether this function has one extremum, two extremum, three extremum, so on. And that's easy. We just do a calculus problem, right? You calculate V prime of R. And if you want to know even more, you can calculate the V double prime. That gives you whether it's concave or convex and so on at extremum. Is it a minimum or a maximum? So take another derivative of this respect to R, which is, right, I get a 2 here, negative 2. R cubed, 3, R4. Minus 12, this becomes a plus R5, right? So I now check how many extrema this has by checking the roots, and that's a simple problem. So it's a you get into a quadratic problem, you set this equal to zero, you solve it. So I just give you the answer then, but you can do it. If L squared is, in fact, maybe I just write this roots for you, so that's more clear to see. The roots are 1, 1. Okay, so then I can easily say what happens if this thing, what do you call this, the term? No, there's a name in algebra, quadratic equations for this.
Discriminant,
yeah. If it's zero, I have two roots coincide, right? So that's 2m is L squared. If that case, I have R plus is the same as R minus, double root, and you can then put this zero, I get L squared over 2m, but because, is that correct? What do I get? L squared over 2m. Oh, this is 12. So therefore, that's 12 over 2, I get a 6. Did I do this correctly? Oh, there was a, I know what I did wrong. This has a 2 here. So now it makes sense. Okay. Now, if this is less than zero, I have no real roots. And if 2m squared is less than L squared, I have two distinct roots. and one of it turns out, and it's easy to see from here, one of it, that they have to be less than L over M over 2. Well, and because of you have these conditions, then therefore you get a condition constraint on the fact that one of them should be larger than 6M and the other one should be less than 6M. And you get another one, which you can do the analysis yourself, calculate with double prime, and the other one will not also be bounded from below, cannot go below 3M. Okay, so now with this rough analysis, then I said, well, if I'm dealing with this case, I have an inflection point. So I get something like the two roots are meeting each other. If I can do, so it's coming, but it's almost gets zero and something like that. If I'm dealing with two roots, then it will go up, come back down, and then go. So I get a minimum. I'm exaggerating. Could be a little bit this higher than that. I have to. Forget about Newtonian. And then if I don't have any root, then this is just happening. Okay. The point being, the only one that allows me to have a viable stability for the orbit is this case. Because in that case, I get a minimum. Which we said it's somewhere larger than 6M. So in this region, smaller than 6M, let's see, this is, no, I was correct. This is R plus, it's larger than 6M, and the other one is larger than 3M. And therefore, this region allows me, like around R plus, I could get a stable orbit. Does that make sense? Right? And this is a classical mechanic. If you have a potential and it has a minimum, then it's so your particle could be sitting either here. This is really all of that. It's coming from this, right? The moment I have this conservation, there's no other variable here. You can take its second derivative. All the dynamic is encoded here. So once you have fixed that, and your V is fixed with these two other parameters, so if you have their values, then you know what kind of system you're dealing, like even classically, right? So it's either sitting here, at R plus, or if it's a little bit above, it starts oscillating for a small oscillation approximation. Yes? Does that make sense? Okay, so this location of 6M itself is called the ISCO, which stands for innermost circle, the inner stable, C is circular orbit. So let me put it somewhere. thinking there should be a stable here that I'm missing. But you look up the acronym, circular orbit. And that's basically telling me, because I said R plus has to be larger, greater than 6m, the least it can be is approach that point. And that's practically when then I lose my minimum. So this is the lowest bound on having a stable orbit. Okay, any questions here? Yes.
Should it be 12 instead of 2? 12.
Yes, they were all having 12. Why didn't you all mention that? There's Kremen. There's 12. 12. Anything else? Okay. So, if I have a particle with this potential, it sits there, then what does it tell me about the evolution of R? The distance or the radius of the orbit?
You can take like second derivative of the potential and we'll get like a frequency.
Yeah. But if it's exactly sitting there, not moving? Not moving, right? So if R happens to be exactly the root, so that means setting this exactly to zero, and then you satisfy R dot equal to zero, VR should be equal to is this, and so on. But if it is a little bit higher, then what do I expect? I expect oscillations, right? And expect oscillation with frequency, which is given by what quantity? Not quite. Just forget about the whole orbit. I have a mechanical system, classical mechanic. I have a potential. It has a minimum. Let's call it the circular point, because if it's R plus is exactly at R plus sitting, then at that point, it's just circular. R dot is zero. Now, if you have a ball and then you start a little bit higher, what does it do? It starts to oscillate, right? And then how do I, in the small distance approximation, how do I approximate the frequency?
The second derivative.
Second derivative, right? Okay, so that's pretty easy to do. Let's see if we can do it, right? Because, right, if you take the second derivative of that equation, the one in the box, then the first term, can I get it from there? So I want to say, well, if I had an orbit and it was circular as RC, then taking, let's do it, I'm doing this just for the fun. You're losing time, but I want to make sure everybody is with me. So if I take a time derivative of that, I get 2 cancels out, R dot plus V prime of R. R dot is equal to 0. So now if we are exactly at R plus, that tells me so R double dot, R, let's do this, so. Now, either R dot is 0, or R double dot is minus v prime of r, right? So if it's moving on circle, r dot is zero, so r is not changing the distance. R v at that point, v prime is also zero, so that's also good. Now, if I deviate slightly from that, therefore, substituting back in here, so now my R is RC plus delta R. So also keep in mind, for the circular one, V of R, this is zero. So if I put it back here and expand it out, I get RC plus delta R double dot is minus V prime of RC plus delta R. Now the left-hand side RC is not changing. It's constant. It's the circular one. So the distance for that orbit is constant. The deviation that is changing, so I get, and the right hand side I Taylor expanded, so I get v prime of rc minus v double prime of rc times delta r. So in the when delta r is much less than rc, then this reduces because this is zero. So I have, which is classical mechanics, right? I'm just writing it just to make sure everybody's with me. And because if it's a minimum, then V double prime is positive, and therefore this gives me the frequency of oscillations. So therefore, your frequency of oscillations for R are given by, or let's say square of it. What is it? It's just V double prime, right? Because that's the, if I have this equation, this ODE, and this is constant, so that gives me the frequency. Now let's go back to my particular V. I have it up there. Again, I do have the V double prime. Now all I need to do is calculate it exactly at RC. Now, what is RC? So RC is the root, which I can calculate. It's the larger root, the greater one. I can calculate it from there, substitute it here, right? So it's the same as for the cases, again, where we are dealing with the case that I have two roots. So where 2m squared is a smaller one. Okay, you can do it. You just put the RC, in fact, back in there, calculate it. I'm gonna skip the calculation, but just, it's a plug-in thing, right? So this is what I get. Any question? Does that make sense? So you have V double prime. You just substitute RC in there. It will have some, yeah, there is M and there is RC. What did I do with L? Any guesses? Why don't I have any L left over? I must have somehow cancelled off or eliminated for L. Anyone can tell me how? Because I substitute RC here. I do see there's going to be RC, there's going to be M, but there's going to be L. So something else I have used in order to eliminate L.
I mean finding
V prime is also zero, right? This little thing here relates M and L and RC together through the second one. So at RC, V prime should be zero. So you put it there, you can eliminate for L. Yeah? And so you will do this and tell me if you get the same answer later or not. Okay, so that's the frequency. Let's go back to the original problem that I'm trying to solve. I'm trying to figure out when the planet goes around the star and comes back to its same location. So then how much the phi, the angle, has moved. So what I figured out here is that, well, what am I doing? I'm saying, well, let's assume the planet orbit is almost circular. Use that approximation. If that's the case, then my equations tell me it comes back to the same distance as it used to be from the star with this frequency. So basically, I figured out the frequency of from going from there all the way to here, because, or the time, right? It's 1/3 frequency. So that's what this quantity quantifies. Right? Now, how do I figure out delta phi? I have this time, but I need to, what is this angle? Let me see. Can I think it through? And you help me out here. So we are starting here again, right? So it goes, comes back here. By the time it comes back here, it has gone 2 pi. So let's call it, phi. I don't know what it is. It's 2 pi. I don't want to say delta phi because I'm already using it. So the phi quantity has gone and come back, but it has gone extra. So to go for 2 pi is telling me, well, that give me the periodicity of phi itself. Let's see. Because if it takes it some time phi to go for 2 pi, so 2 pi is related, therefore, to its own frequency by 2 pi over w of phi, right? But it has gone more. So it has gone another extra time that it took from this one to that one. So how will I figure that out? So from here to here is tau phi, but from here all the way to here, the other location, it takes tau r, the periodicity of r. So the time difference from this location to that location would be tr minus t phi, which if I have phi dot, then delta phi would be phi dot time tr minus t phi. As the logic stand? Yeah, Yaroslav? Yeah, you think so? Right? So if the dis so the radius I want to get to perihelion itself, it takes me tau of r, so that's the periodicity of r. For phi to go back to its first, like wherever it started at that first perihelion, to go back to the same angle, that time is the periodicity of phi. So therefore, the amount that it at the time that from the location it would have reached here to get to firm here would be the difference in time. So where really, when it comes back, it's not here anymore. That's the whole point. It gets here. So then the time from here to here is really tr minus t phi. Now what's the angle? It's phi dot times delta t. So that's the delta. Therefore, so this is, I have delta t, but I also then therefore delta r, I guess, I call it delta r. So periodicity for this one is 2 pi over this, but delta phi is really tr minus t phi times phi dot. Now let's see what do we have available to calculate this. I'm gonna say, well, then tr, let's plug it in. It's going to be 1 over 2 pi over omega r minus 2 pi over frequency of phi times phi dot. And now, to calculate this, there is another approximation I'm going to make, which is that both of these things, if it was a circular orbit, would have agreed with each other because they would come at the same time. So in that case, both of them would match W of circular. That's, I guess, why. But now they are deviating slightly. And for the phi, also same thing. Now WC, what is that? Is the frequency of the orbit. And I know what it is because in that case, going back to original things I have over there, angular momentum is L r squared phi dot. If phi dot, if I have just a circle going out, r is constant, so phi dot is constant. For RC, this is constant, this is constant, phi dot is constant. So frequency is just phi dot in that case. So it would be, which would be all L over RC. L over RC squared. Same thing with this one, right? It's almost phi dot, but it's slightly different. So all of these, you can do the zeroth order or first order, only to the first order approximations. So if I do that, then this also, so this is already of order of first order, because delta phi is now, I have 2 pi is out, phi dot is out, but in the bracket, I get W phi minus W r over this is order, first order, right? Because they both have an order of epsilon something, right? So the rest of the things I can calculate to zeroth order. And I'm going to call this WP. So this is 2 pi phi dot to zeroth order and WC squared times WP. Okay. Now, how do I calculate? So I have WC, I have phi C. In fact, in that regime, phi dot C and WC are the same. So it cancels one. And we know what is that. That's, we got it, right? It's over there, L over RC. All I need to calculate is this creature. Now, in this creature, what do I have? I have already calculated this piece. I need to calculate this one. So, in the notes, there's a little bit of cheating here, and I'm gonna do the same cheating, but I leave it for you to do a proper calculation for this one as well. My claim is that this thing, in fact, the correction to this are of second order in epsilon. And think about how to calculate that. The actual periodicity of phi coming back, you would have to do some kind of integration to calculate how much time it takes for phi to come back to itself. Losing my notes here. Add this, recover this. Right. To really calculate delta phi, you would have to calculate tau of phi, which would be some d tau from 0 to 2 pi. And then you can calculate this in terms of saying, well, write it in terms of phi again, and then write it in terms of r again. It's kind of similar to what we will do for bending of light and calculate it, but I'm gonna say, well, it's second order if you do all of that, and so just keep this, which you know what it is. So therefore, what was it then? This becomes the same as WR, which is L over RC squared minus WR. We calculated it somewhere up there. Here, substituted. Again, you have L coming from V prime. Which I write it here so you don't have to keep thinking about it. So L, using the V prime equation, turns out to be and I had this thing being equal to okay. I have L, plug it in, M, RC, then I will get WP, put it there again. Once again, you have to plug also for WC. So, and then, leaving the steps for you, I finally get what, which is to leading order, it becomes 6 pi m over RC. And again, RC is also much larger than m, or the radius of the star. So the whole orbit is much larger than radius of sun, for example, in this case. So then, therefore, to leading order, you just get this. Or in term of angular momentum, if you can, you want to write it again, RC be substituted there. It's 6 pi m squared over L squared. Now, the perihelion shift for Mercury, I said it was about how many arc seconds? Does anyone remember? It's like 34 arc seconds per century or something, right? But the funny thing is, all of this thing that I did are the relativistic correction. In order to actually calculate perihelion for Mercury, you have to also take into account the fact that there is Earth, Venus, and all of that. So first you have to classically remove all of that in order to experimentally be able to measure this quantity. Any question?
Go ahead. About the part that you define omega r and omega phi, and is it omega c plus epsilon omega c? Omega,
yeah, I'm saying any.
And is it kind of first order perturbation?
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm doing. I mean, all of this approximation relies on the fact that I'm saying, well, consider delta r over delta rc is much smaller than 1. So everything is almost circular, close to circular. So then do first order perturbation around that circular orbit. Because at the circular orbit, I know everything, all the quantities. So then, questions? Any questions? Okay, few minutes break until we do the next topic. Okay. And if you have more questions, let me know. I know it's a very long calculation. It's hard to keep track of the steps where we ended up from where we started. And I did skip some steps, which most of them are algebraic. So I trust you can do them yourself.
It might be a really basic question, but I didn't follow when we went from delta r double dot to omega r squared.
Okay, so let's do that one, right? So this is this one, right? So I have a quantity on the left, second time derivative, minus, in this case, we are talking about the minimum. So we, the double prime is positive. So that's a positive number. Let's call it K. And that's Y. Does this look familiar?
Last
one. Which one?
Just
I guess the fun thing to remember is now basically that image that as Mercury goes around the sun, right, it proves, like it keeps doing something geometrically interesting. Start. Now, before making it back to Schwarzschild's coordinate singularity, I want to go over a little bit of physical motivation, and then Rindler again, and then go back there. So the physical motivation for horizons, I guess one idea is think of it as a Newtonian story. So in Newtonian story, if I have an object, spherical, like Earth, then, and I have a particle with, test particle with speed, I guess, V, right? Then in this potential, Newtonian potential, I have, once again, the conservation of energy. Forget about atmosphere and all of that. So this has a mass m. The big object is m. This is little m. Right? So if you shoot it outward, what happens to it? Does it go all the way to infinity or come back, or what does it depend on? You have done classical mechanics more recent than me, so you should be able to tell me. Like I have a rocket, for example, I want to throw it off. Yeah, and what does it have to satisfy in order to make it all the way to the outer space or infinite?
Exceed the escape velocity.
And except escape velocity is given by? When it goes to infinity, at least it goes to zero, right? Because if it is less than that, all right, So I want to make it all the way to infinity. In infinity, this is going to be 0. So this better be greater or equal to 0, which means this better be equal to greater than 0. So V therefore has to be VC, which is, if I take this, so in that limit, I set this equal to 0, they take it to the other side. What do I get? I have M G R 2, the M's cancel out, and I have a square root, right? So now let's shoot it this way so it's, I have more room. If V is less than VC, it will go, but then it comes back, right? But if V is larger than that, then it can go. Now, if for, like, let's hypothetically say this is a relativistic particle going with the speed of light. So in that case, I need, what is that? So what's the argument in that case? So in that case, V escape. So V escape, if I'm shooting it with speed of light, V cannot be larger than speed of light. Let's see. To have VE. Okay, right. So if I want VE to be C, then that tells me, put substitute C here, I get a relation for R, which is 2gm C squared. So if this is C, then I can calculate R, and that's that. Now, if R is smaller than that value, right? For any object where R is smaller than value, that means this quantity becomes larger than the speed of light, which means I need the speed of the particle exceed the speed of light, right? Which cannot happen. So we have a conundrum here, right? So that means, so anything that has a smaller radius than this quantity, any object for its mass, the radius is smaller than this, then this particle cannot escape the planet or the star, all right? So that's kind of a Newtonian motivation. Obviously, with photons, we are talking about massless particles, but thinking about a, even maybe somewhat similar, well, I'm not, take M2 not to be exactly zero, but reach that limit again, and I have to do relativistic correction. But that gives you some kind of idea that even in Newtonian gravity, you have some kind of idea of a horizon, that if one object is very compact, then you're at odds with a special relativity. Okay, now let's do a proper calculation for seeing the horizon effects. So to see that, first we do the Rindler, because we worked on that first, I guess. It has the priority. We didn't have to, but Rindler is easy, I guess, in a way, because we know the actual spacetime is inside Minkowski, and we know how to deal with Minkowski. So just again, crash reminder, in that case, metric in Rindler coordinate was 1 plus ax squared dt, t is the time of the Rindler observer, plus dx squared. And we also said, well, it's kind of like this. You have the way we did it at the beginning of the course, we started from Minkowski, and we said, well, if you have a observer with constant acceleration, then you can define this new coordinate for this observer, and then we found that this coordinate is only applicable to one quadrant of Minkowski. So therefore, in this coordinate, the new coordinate, everything here, first of all, has constant acceleration a, and these are x constants curve. And you remember what happens to x if it reaches this line? The quantity, you did it in homework one, I guess, right? What was the limit? Limiting?
One,
yeah. So, like, x is in the interval of 1, t could take any value. And you can see it here too. The metric fails at x equal to minus a, 1 over a, goes to 0, 0, g00, zero, zero, the time disappears, right? So this was same thing as this one. So because it's the limiting behavior of this curve. On the other hand, the time constant coordinates, if you take t constant, then you will have these lines. So this is like t constant. This is t zero, t positive, t negative, and so on. And for example, this is x zero, x goes to plus infinity, minus 1 over a when it reaches there. Now, it looks like, now let's say I didn't know about the background, which was Minkowski. Someone just gave me this metric, and I look at it and I say, well, it's something similar to Schwarzschilder. This metric has a singularity. G00 goes to 0. Time vanishes at tx equal to, let's say, right? Is that a problem? And obviously, space time seems to be finishing, like as like a catastrophe, like my space doesn't exist, time doesn't exist, what's going on? Now, before doing that, I am also going to see what this observer sees regarding the signals and redshifting. So let's take two of them, and I'm going to say one of them XB, and take another one. XA, sorry, it's becoming very busy here. Now, so this is XB, this is XA. If this one sends a signal to this one, similar to the problem we did in the beginning, because G00 here and here are not the same, the signal will be redshifted or blue shifted, right? And we know how to do that calculation. Does anybody remember how does the, what's the formula for redshifting here? How does it go? Like, for example, let's say it's a photon. It has a frequency nu b here. And then when it reaches here, it has a frequency nu a. The relation between nu a to nu b. What's that?
Inverse of
ratio of square of ratio of this g zero zero, right? So it's basically how the measured, the proper time is here compared to what it is here. So it's kind of like, which is calculate TT or Z0, 0 as I wrote it here. At A is up, so B comes up over A. And to be honest with you, I have a, like, I don't have the memorization capability to remember this formula. So sometimes every time I redo it to make sure I get it right, but the calculation is not that hard. Because again, it's similar to what we did in tutorial 1 or 2. You take, I say, well, let's say it's a, like a Morse signal or something. It sends, something happens here, and then another one here. So delta TB is from TB to TB prime. And then the first thing that gets here is TA and then TA prime, and then I calculate so in this coordinate I get DTP what it is, and then here, and it's not so what am I doing? So I'm gonna say, well, a signal that goes from here, how do you calculate it? It's a light, so it goes on a light trajectory geodesic, so I calculate TA minus TB, and is the same as calculating DX because it's a light trajectory, so DS goes to zero on this trajectory, so it's the same as calculating 1 plus AX squared from XP to XA, or which one did I go? Yeah, TA to TB is from XA to XP, if I did it correctly. But then this is similar to the other one. And so therefore this, I get this, let's see. What did I do wrong here? I have to, and this is the same thing that happened to me during the tutorial. Try to do it on the spot, but I get, I confuse myself. TA minus TB is the same as dx, so over here, therefore, oh, yes, these are t, not tau. Okay, so I realized. Okay, now it's correct. So therefore, delta t's are the same, because then I take the other one over here, and TA prime minus TA is the same as TB prime minus TB. So that means the delta T, not the proper time, at that point is the same as delta t at the B point. And then when I have that, then you realize that, well, calculating the delta TB, which is the proper time at the G00 times delta T, these cancel out. But I won't get into it because otherwise it lose a lot of time. So, but this is the same calculation we did in tutorial one. Now, the point I want to make here is, so in this case, if I substitute the G00, now GTT, you take it there, is going to be 1 over AX of B over 1 over plus AX of A. So if X A, for example, in this case, XB is less than XA, right? So the signal, therefore, this is going to be less than 1, right? So the frequency has decreased from location B to the A. So when the one that is closer to the horizon is sending a signal to the one that is further away, its frequency is reducing because its ratio is less than 1, right? Now, if B goes all the way to the horizon, what happens?
It becomes zero.
Yeah, so then I have VA over VA completely being zero, right? Or approaching zero. So once again, now if, therefore, if this is XA, and now XB has reached very close to here, and is sending me a photon, by the time it gets to me, sitting over here, the frequency has redshifted infinitely to like zero, right? Or in other words, if I had a signal and went to there, it would be infinitely blue shifted. So it would, because the ratio is zero, so VB is infinitely larger than that, or VA is infinitely zero of that. Which is interesting, right? So if any finite light coming out of close to the disk may not, in fact, from there itself, would not reach XA. Well, I have to be careful about that because the light goes on the light cone direction, 45 degrees. So obviously nothing coming from here will even come to here because it goes like that, right? Will not reach me. But something very close to it, it gets darker and darker if they send a photon with finite frequency. Now, it's interesting because everything from this side, this is also x is equal to 1 over. Things from this can reach, come through the horizon, and reach the observer. Now, you would have to would say, well, the same thing occurs here too. Isn't it true that the redshift then becomes infinite? So it's gonna go, the frequency gonna go to zero, or redshifting is infinite because redshift is opposite of that, right? The wavelength is therefore, let's see, if V goes to zero, therefore lambda A over lambda B goes to infinity. But if you know the physics, that doesn't happen. If this is because it's, I put this on the top of the Minkowski. Obviously, a photon going there does not get dark when it crosses this location. The actual thing is, well, when it's reaching here, it gets infinitely blue shifted. And then when it goes there through, it gets infinitely red shifted. So the observer gets those ones because they were finite here. But anything starting with finite frequency over here, by the time it gets here, it's very dark. Now, this is sometimes called the flashlight phenomena, which is that if this observer, while traveling in its own spaceship, throws a flashlight to the horizon and its light on, as it gets closer and closer, according to this one, the light gets dimmer and dimmer and dimmer to the point that it gets dark. It looks like it turned off. But what is really happening is that that flashlight, in fact, now that's the next job I want to show, is that nothing is happening to it. It's just going through. Okay. Any question here before I do the extension? Now, I want to do the reverse of what we have done before, which I said, you start from Minkowski, you go to this observer coordinate, you lose part of the space. And I want to say, well, it's the artifact of your coordinate. It doesn't mean something catastrophic happened to spacetime. You can reverse it and find the other piece. And this is, in fact, an interesting story because a lot of time you don't know the backstory that it came from Minkowski. This story happened in black holes. Like, people didn't know. They had the Schwarzschild solution. They didn't know if there was anything beyond the horizon or not until someone found that it was extendable. In this case, we know, so it's nice, right? So the way we can do it is basically the coordinate system, and it's the same story that it's going to happen there, work, is that first you look at this and say, well, this thing, this trajectory seems to be doing things very oddly. What if I change my coordinates to null trajectories, such that the direction of the coordinate goes along the direction of the light? Can I do that? And that's not that hard, because all you have to do is, well, you have the metric, right? Where was it? Over here. You say, well, for a light ray, ds squared is 0. So I can find a relation between dx and dt. Oh, let me get the white. So you solve this differentiation, integrate it out. You find two solutions. Plus some constant. That's your general solution for the light rays that are radially going in or out, or the relation between t and x. So any light ray falls, if I now look at it from the coordinates of Rindler, if you take any one of them, let's say, and you don't know it's going to go there because you don't know if there's anything beyond. So this one should correspond to that equation, one of them. And it's not that easy to see because this is going this way. So x and t must have the opposite sign. So it must be corresponding to the negative sign. And that the constant tells you whether it's going, whether it's this one, or it's this one, or someone another one. So, and for the other ones that are moving 45 degrees in the other direction, t and x must have the same sign because they're increasing. So then you're dealing with the other solution. So now I'm going to take the Rindler out, and I want to say, well, that constants are basically, because each of them determines which one I am in, give me a way of to grid my space and define a new coordinate system. And basically the constant, one of them, call it the T minus, and the other one, T plus. So now you can look, for example, at the location that these two are zero. It coincides with, I think, x equal to zero, t equal to zero, so it must be here. So if this was your original Rindler quadrant, now I managed to grid it up with this new coordinate at u equal to zero. Let me see if I do it correctly. So I think what happens, u is infinite here. V is negative infinity here. And you can check it out because T is negative infinity. This one also goes to zero, so you get negative infinity. And so this is the direction of V. This is your direction of U. And other locations are, for example, this must be V equal to 1. Oh, sorry. U. Yes, sorry. So U is this direction, so it must be U equal to 1, because then you get to U infinity here. And or the other ones here, for example, V negative infinity to V plus infinity. Now, this is the future infinity of every null ray, right? They reach there, the ones that come here, like ingoing ones. We call them ingoing because they go towards the horizon. Future infinity. This is the outgoing past infinity for these guys. What else can I do? Okay, so far I found a different coordinate system. Now I'm gonna do another step, another trick. The new trick is, so if you do this first one, let me see, what does that do to my metric? It turns the metric into the s squared minus e to the a v minus u, and you can do it, substitute it back in the metric, du dv. So it only has a cross term. Now, you can do even better. Try to even get rid of that front, this G, U, V, and turn it into 1. And the way you can do it is by defining, right now, U and V, the way they're measuring, are not affinely parametrized. You can affinely parameterize it. I will not go into details because we are out of time. But so the way, let me see, do I have it here? Right. So if you define the affine parameter, one of them for ingoings will be minus e to the u, and outgoing would be e to the v. And therefore, choose them as the way of like measuring the parameters, like your units, on this axis and that axis versus the U. And if you do that, then that gets rid of the four front factor. So now this is little u. I think there is, I might have a mistake here with sign, so make sure you check this. So that simplifies the matrix further. And I feel like I'm missing some signs here. Check the signs. And then finally, from here, you notice that this is like a 45 degree angle. The gridding are, seems to be regular. What is happening to your coordinates is that u is equal to zero at this going to infinity, big U going to plus infinity. So it meets that edge of the quadrant. And V goes to zero at V going to minus infinity. But then you say, well, now in this metric, nothing is happening at u and v going to zero. Metric, fine. It's true. My u is from zero to plus infinity. And v, is it? Also from zero to plus infinity. But what stops me to not continue the grid, right? So I reach u equal to zero here. Nothing is going wrong. Why don't I just continue? And same thing with v. And therefore, can I extend it out? And the extension is really what gives you back the Minkowski. So basically you say, well, you had a manifold M, which you knew its limitation in the first metric, but you recognize this manifold is extended to a bigger manifold because the coordinate system is well defined, the metric is well defined. So you allow this thing to go through all the way to minus infinity. And then you can come up with a new coordinate system to characterize it, bring it back to the Minkowski, which in Minkowski, you know, if you have the light cone, right? So then what the coordinate transformation is, which I have to, yeah. So I'm going to just write it down, but we won't get to discuss it much. Maybe tomorrow I discuss it a little bit. So T U plus V over 2. And that takes you back to Minkowski. Which is telling you the Rindler is can be extended into Minkowski. And in fact, it's the maximal extension for Rindler. Yeah. To a
acceleration.
It's you're saying am I missing the A somewhere? It is possible that I somehow along the line I should switch A to 1. Yes. So it should be probably following us here. Okay. That must be a typo. I don't think we need it anymore here, though. because I'm going back to Minkowski though. But there may be another normalization that I'm missing. So let's end here. Thank you. And then I see you in tutorial this afternoon. And we can talk again more about all of this and as well as the new problems.